Welcome back, y'all, to another episode of the Black Art Podcast with me, Lloyd.
Me, Jake. Hell yeah, episode 40. The big 4-0.
Dude, it's getting closer for all of us. Further
Yes.
away for some, but closer
Well,
for
yeah.
me.
Benjamin Button.
I can't. This is a 9-month special. We could have made a baby in this time. This would be our due date.
I'm glad that we made a podcast instead because I'm
Yeah, true.
deathly
True.
terrified of children.
Also, you're legally not allowed within 200 meters of them, so there is that.
There
That's a
is
joke. That's
that.
a joke to all our listeners around the world that don't have sarcasm in their vocabulary.
Geez, surprisingly, more people than you think don't understand the
No,
subtle
I
art of
yeah, no, that
sarcasm.
was definitely a targeted joke. Anyway, this is the Black Art Podcast. To any of our new listeners, as we're gaining more and more every single week on this podcast, we talk about creativity and magic. We don't spend the first half an hour chatting about our week and how we're doing. There are many other podcasts that you can bore yourself with to do that. We tend to dive straight into the juicy stuff and start creating magic based on a predetermined plot, or not, more often than not, it's just on the fly. But this week, we decided at the end of last week's episode, we were going to tackle a really classic card magic effect and just see what creative ways we could approach it to possibly enhance it. Not saying that we will, but just to play. So, Jake, do you want to explain what that card plot is and what the goal or intention of this episode is going to be?
Hell yeah. So, I mean, I think no matter how comfortable you are with magic, if you're ever thrust into the position where you have to perform some kind of very quick impromptu set with a deck of cards, most magicians are going to lean towards this semi effect. I mean, it's literally just made up of basic principles, but it's in and of itself, it is still a very effective effect. And it's li literally just having a card be chosen. The card is lost within the deck. Another card is shown to the participants and the spectators and placed in one of their hands. And then when they turn the card over, it becomes the original card.
Very simple, select the card, changes in their hand. Yeah, amazing. And what spurred this is that we watched a performance of an amazing magician, and what they tried to do was add in some sort of elements of giving it more story or more weight, or more grandeur. And then at the moment of the change, adding some script to it, which was to sort of enhance it. But what we felt was, after actually watching it, as they were experiencing the card change, this delivery of the script, which was supposed to sort of make it feel enhanced, was reductive. It actually weakened it because they were about to be like, oh, what the fuck? And then they were like, pardon what? Huh? Instead of just being like allowing to like ride off into nirvana, you know?
It's weird because this is definitely an effect where the basic mechanics of it itself is enough to carry the effect. And I am the last person who should be speaking about not unnecessarily adding meaning or script or plot or narrative or anything at all to an effect because it would be hypocritical of me to say I don't do that with every single effect that I ever put out or create. But like you said, I do think reductive might be the right word to use here because if something was lost in translation. It was almost like there was this element of a pattern interruption with the participant where the effect wasn't as effective as it could have been, as it should have been, as it usually is.
Yeah,
I mean, don't
absolutely.
get me
So with
wrong,
that,
still an amazing reaction because it's still an amazing trick.
yeah, still an amazing reaction, still an amazing trick. But what we basically just said, what would you do then if haha, if we think we're so if we're so high and mighty enough to say that a thing didn't work for somebody else, what would we do? Like, put your money where your mouth is. So this is what this episode is going to attempt to do. I think it's also important to explore more elements to the effect or surrounding the effect. What I mean by that is most magicians open with that trick. In fact, I normally open with something along the I open with Crazy Man's Handcuffs if I can, or some other stuff. But if I'm in a jam and I've just got a deck of cards, it's probably what I'm going to open with. That being said, I've never really looked, and it's for obvious reasons, right? Why most magicians open it. It's simple. It's a quick trick. It's very, very quick. Doesn't really need any context, and it's also really powerful. But, and also, it sort of seems to be the one that most lay people will sort of remember. And I think partially because of a few factors. If it's the first one they see, they'll remember it. If it's so direct and easy to comprehend in terms of what happened, they'll remember it. And also, it's powerful. And then oftentimes they will remember, if you do like a really special trick at the end, like an Omni deck or a bigger trick, they'll tend to remember that as well. But I wonder if it's worth exploring when to perform this trick. Should you blow your load, basically, on the first, you know, should you go in all guns blazing with this when maybe this could be turned into actually a complete finale piece?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I like that kind of approach to tackling it, because it is actually a fairly modular effect. Sometimes, you know, a lot of people will use this at the end of an ambitious card routine, or they'll use it in the middle of some other kind of effect. It is modular in nature, so we might as well explore how it can be a finale. And also, it tackles a point that we were a bit unsure about, because you are trying to jam meaning and narrative and like this philosophical thoughts into an effect that lasts 5 seconds. It feels a little bit unearned. Like,
yeah,
you can't ask the participant to give their whole heart to this thing you're saying when, you know, the routine has only lasted 5 to 10 seconds. It doesn't feel justified. But if we were to use this as a finale, or if it was to become, you know, the end piece to another effect, then that moment becomes more justified, and you can lean more heavily on narrative and scripting at the end, because you've led up to that point.
Could you give me, I'm a little slow off out of the stables. Could you give me sort of a rough idea of what you, and an example of what you mean, or?
Well, that would, so if you just took for example, an ambitious card, if you were to come up with a new set of phases for ambitious card, which lots of people do, and lots of people do really well, in essence, I don't ever think there should be really more than around 3 stages.
Yeah.
Purely for the sake of time, and purely because I don't think people pay attention too much after you've done it 3 times.
Diminishing returns.
Yeah, and just aesthetically, 3 is a very pleasing number. You know, when you see like a slogan for something or a log line for anything, it's like duh, duh, and duh. It's three is just a nice number. So if you were to come up with some kind of weird new ambitious card where this was the finale, then it would feel a little bit more, you'd be able to jam more script and narrative into there, and for it to actually feel like you'd earned it because you've led up to it, instead of this just being a standalone effect. But
I see what you mean.
But actually coming up with the effect itself right now, I would need to think a little bit longer. I do like the idea of using it, of going completely left of field and having a really weird, ambitious card, and that be the ending to it, though.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, with that all being said, that sort of conversation was sort of like semi-inspired by Rich Relish, who he put out, and I'm going to kick myself for not, a trick called Sequence. I think it was called Sequence with the 1914.
Yeah.
The trick's very, very clever, very, very good. But he says this is not a piece which is going to be the closing element to your show. This is a piece that I use to start my performances off. Because and what he openly says about the project is that he likes to build an impossibility. Like, so he doesn't like to go in like with a fucking Stone Cold Stunner at the start and then possibly do things. And I thought that was such a brilliant way of thinking, even though it's kind of like in a way, yeah, you always want to finish with your best thing last, but to actively like structure it so that like each effect is a harder hitter. I don't know. It sounds obvious, but it's also not obvious at the same time. Mm. And that's what sort of took me down this path. Right. So let's break down the elements of what's happening and what's being perceived as happening, right?
Okay.
So, for example, we could explore everything here from the selection process all the way down to how they reveal the card, right?
Mm-hmm.
And anything in between. So at its core, I always find it tricky, and maybe this is just completely looking too much into it, but this is what the Black Art podcast does, is that we just sort of nitpick it. We just pick away at everything and scratch at the surface of everything. And sometimes we find fresh skin and sometimes we just find old wounds. But the thing that I've about this card change to me is that I kind of find it a little bit hard to remember the two cards. Do you ever get this, right? When you have them select a card, gets lost in the deck, then you turn over an X card, place that in their hand, and you say, what card did you pick? And I say 50-50, there'll be this deer in the headlights look that the participant will give, where they go, as they're trying to remember slash fart. You know, they're like, oh, it's the, you know, and if, I think anyone that's done a little bit of performing will agree to this. And there's some good tips to get over that. One way is to, I say, I want you to pick a card and say it to yourself in your head three times. I tend to do this quite a lot now, especially in longer routines, which can help them recall it, like not just by rote, but also like the little sound of it in their head as well, like the rhythm of it. But yeah, so there's something there which if they're trying to, if there's two pieces of almost new information, because people don't think about playing cards on the daily, then it can be hard. That moment of when their card is going to be revealed, you want them to immediately be on the same level as you, to be fully like, my card was the five of clubs, and it's, oh my God, you know, instead of, was my card the, is it? Oh yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, I've had transpositions fall flat on their face just because the participant doesn't remember that the five of clubs was in their hand.
Yeah, I've done it, happened to me, and I've seen it 1,000 times where they'll turn it over and they'll look to their friends to see if it's the right one.
Yeah,
you know, they go the black 10, the red 3, the yeah. So if that's an element of that could cause stickiness, could that be built? Could that be baked into the routine where it's like a definitive?
Yeah.
Like it just, like they can't forget it.
So are we throwing away the obvious, just having them sign the card as a way to remember it?
Yeah. I mean, there is that. I have this, I always do like an episode kind of on signing cards.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. If I ever watch a magic trailer, as soon as I see the magician say time to sign the card, I skip forward. Like I just don't care.
You know, yeah,
I think it your can own, slow a performance your own, down unnecessarily.
Your own, well, there's also, I think that it does have a place because people like destroying cards and people like defacing objects. There's an inherent thrill in vandalizing a playing card to a spectator.
We'll and there is a little, unique.
There's a little smile on their face when you give them a Sharpie and they get to destroy something pretty, which, you know, is fair enough. And that does have its own moments. And it's just the fact, at the end of an effect, the spectator is not going to want to keep their own signature. So whenever you say people, and this is, you know, whenever someone says, oh, and here's a souvenir for you to keep, I do think, well, that is absolutely pointless because I don't want to see my own signature.
Yeah, I used to think it was a cool thing to do. And then I realized it was just a really shitty piece of card with it. Some people do treasure it. Like I have got friends that have their signed card from like Torn or Restore cards that I've done in their wallet. And yeah. I used to think it was like a bragging point, but I'm with you. Like I kind of like, ugh.
But it's what's happened to the signed card that makes it special. Then it's not just a plain signed card because I still have, I've got the card that Liam Levenon used last year at Blackpool to do Inverto on me. And that's just got my name on it. You know, usually you wouldn't keep that, but it's got my name on it backwards. So it's cool as fuck.
It's a story.
It's what happens to the card that is interesting. I mean, I have an effect that I put out recently called In Vino Veritas. And that is a card that's got a hole in the center of it that is torn and restored. And people want to keep hold of that just because it's not their name on it. So it's more interesting.
Yeah. I think my issue with people giving away signed cards is when they go, and there you go, an impossible souvenir.
Yeah.
A card that's signed with creases or something in it is not impossible. It's for me, it's the description of what it's the terminology that they're using. Here's a souvenir, yeah, to remind you of what happened. This is the story, the physical representation of this moment is now in your hands. That I'm okay with that. It's where magicians, I suppose it's my pet peeve, where magicians go, and boom, your card is back together and signed, and you can keep this as an impossible souvenir. No, it's fucking not. It's not impossible. What happened to it wasn't apparently impossible, but that is a card that's signed. You know, it's not like a linked object that was never linked before that can't be unlinked, you know? Anyway, we're going off on a tangent. Okay, so signing it could be one way of it really could be one way of solidifying that or nailing that moment that when they see the reveal that they know it's their card without having to think about it. It's instinctive. The other part of this I was going to say is that instead of having the X card that's going to be placed in their hand, it's almost introduced as new information partway through the routine, which it is. But the thing that I was thinking is that if that was just a constant from the start and there was something about it, for example, if there was any story to go with on it, right? If you're going to use any sort of story hook, for example, and I'm just thinking off the top of the head, like if I'm going to say, oh, I'm going to show you the first trick that I ever showed my son, or oh, he's two, but you know, or someone, but you use someone, or like my wife or something like that. And you say, the card they chose was like, for example, my son would be the Jack of Spades, right? And you start off about talking about that card and you show it on the top of the deck, right? Now, this has some gravitas to it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's not going to come in as like a distraction point midway through the routine when they're trying to remember the name of their card. And they're questioning, what was it again? As you're chatting about something else, they're like, oh, yeah, Bob's Michael. Oh, yeah, yeah, that, okay, got it. You know, so this is it, like the card could be, the card that's going to change could be introduced very early on. Right. So you could say, look, blah, 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 I'm going to show you the trick. He chose the Jack of Spades. I don't want you to choose that card. So we're going to leave it on top of the deck because I want every time I show this to someone, I want this to be a new experience. So I want them to have their own memories. Something, some bullshit like that, right? But that way you've established the X card at the beginning so that when they see it again, they'll recall that story. Oh, that's his son's card, or that's his friend's card, or that's his wife's card, whatever. So you're keeping clarity like front and center.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, does this sound like overkill to you?
Not at all. I think stuff like this is worth talking about, especially in a space like this where we're allowed to just talk about stupid stuff and first draft stuff and things that might be theory. The other thing I was thinking of is if the routine, the effect has a moment where they naturally have to make a link between the card they chose and something else, then that would maybe solidify it more. So if they have a five of clubs and you say to them, you've chose a five of clubs, so that means you're going to take the top five cards, then there might be more of a chance of them remembering. If the card influences something else that happens, then they're going to naturally link it and remember maybe.
That's interesting. Yeah, because it's a point like that. You've chosen it. Okay. Well, here's going on that then, almost like a step backwards on that, but
yeah.
But taking consideration, it's in these tricks, it's not important that the magician doesn't know the card. But oftentimes this will be like take a card out and remember it and lose it back in the deck.
Mm-hmm.
Where that is sort of the trick, right? Oh, I magically found your card via a mistake or blah, blah, blah. But it's also not really what you care about as a magician. If you care about something changing in their hands.
And yeah.
It's like putting all your chips in on that, I would potentially think. So if that's the case, right? maybe you could do this. You start off, you show, look, I want to show you a piece of magic. It's my favorite thing, whatever. I showed it to my son. He used the Jack of Spades. We're not going to use the Jack of Spades because I don't want you to select it. I want you to create your own story. So we'll leave that on top, but you get to choose any other card for yourself. So now you can turn the deck face up, say, go through and just, it doesn't matter if I see it. It's not one of those type of tricks, but just tell me one that you particularly like. And maybe we'll, maybe we can find some meaning for you, whatever it is, but they're really going to like just focus on this card. So let's say in this instance, we're going to use the Five of Hearts. I got one of my hands. You said the Five of Hearts, and you could say, well, you know, maybe they're a person who's got three children and they're married. So there's like, oh, there's five hearts in your family. You know, you can explain this type of shit to them, whatever. You don't have to, but just because we get to explore these ideas on you, why not? But now this card has relevance to them. So they can easily recall it without having to sign it or anything like that. You know, even though you could easily recall it, it has some weight to it. If it's face up now, you could cull this to the top slash bottom of the deck, right? So it's now going to be above the Jack of Spades. So in one motion, without any convoluted controls or false shuffles, they believe their card's lost in the center of the deck, and you just turn it around. So at this point, you can come back to that Jack on top. And what's nice about that is that everything is concurrent. So they've seen the Jack on top at the start. They see it here again with just a double lift. And here you could add it. And this is where some script could really start to then become the monster of this. What you say here could depend on how much they react, how strong the reaction is. You know, so I don't know. You're better at this part than I am. But you could say, for example, okay, so we're going to come back to my son's favorite card, the Jack of Spades, which is different to your Five of Hearts. But hold your hand out. I said we're going to create your own story here, but we can't, you know, at this point I've put the card into their hands face down. You could say, you know, but we can't create that story unless we, you know, we recreate what happened. And, you know, you could say to them, with my son or whoever it was, I gave them a random card. I give them a card that wasn't theirs, like you have right now. And I allowed that card to transform that, or that card, you know, became transformed into their card whilst they were holding it between their palms of their hands. Now obviously that's impossible as you're holding the Jack of Spades, but just for a moment, you know, and then build it from there. Bit wishy-washy, bit eerie up in the, you know, a bit whimsical, but the difference being here is that just tiny keystone markers feel like they're clarifying the effect much more like intrinsically. Does that make sense?
No, I agree. I like the aspect of almost using cartomancy to have them remember the card as well. So they are going to want to remember it because you're almost giving them a lesson. You're saying to them, oh, you know, traditionally this kind of means, the heart is usually to do with, you know, loved ones, cherished ones, family. And you've got the five there, and, you know, usually that means this. And so maybe there is more remembrance in place because you're almost giving them a little mini lesson.
Yeah. Cartomancy, to anyone that's listening, is basically like, well, you can explain it better than I can, can you?
It is using the imagery and symbolism inherent in the deck of playing cards to divine the future and read the fortune of a participant.
There we go.
There you go.
Beautiful. But yeah, I feel like there's nothing groundbreaking at all there. But if you break down structuring of a routine, and this is open to be tested and to be broken at testing, this could be a weaker version of the effect.
Yeah.
Some participants do love a pick a card, find a card trick, even when it's not meant to be. Like, I think it's Tony Chang's old blog. I talked about this loads. Double Faces said, why do magicians find it necessary to make every triumph trick a selected card process? The trick, who cares about finding a selected card? The whole fucking deck writes itself. That's the paraphrasing of it. But then when you see someone perform a triumph, like Danny D'Ortiz, who does some incredible versions of it, you know, they'll spread the deck, boom, it gets one reaction. The deck is now corrected. Ta-da! And then that champagne cork moment, bang the table, that's your card, boom. And it does enhance the effect. They're like, fuck, it's kind of just like, it just... I'm saying nuts them out.
Tony Chang has some stone cold thoughts on like what makes magic real.
Yeah. I spent some time with him in New York, and he showed me some incredible things. Like very, very ironically, like the best stuff he showed me was like minimal sleight of hand.
He
was heavily influenced after that, seeing Gabi Pereira's, you know, that Spanish magician that's no longer with us. But his handling of that stuff is wild. Like a really, really, really simple in mechanic terms, any card at any number or card at any number. But the scripting of it is fucking phenomenal. It hides the method. I'll have to show you off it. But yeah, just beautiful. Anyway, so yeah, you know, do those small tweaks of, instead of it being a pick a card, lose the card, display a different card, and place that in the hands and change it. Is that stronger than the one that we've just explored here, which is to establish a card,
mm-hmm.
then have them choose one that they form a bond with or have some significance with, and then they hold the first card.
Yeah.
And that becomes it. I feel like it would.
I think so. It's hard to say with some of these things without, you know, testing them and really dwelling on them for a little bit longer than the length of a podcast episode, but it feels like it should. I like the idea of having some kind of a connection formed, however it comes about that they have to remember that card. I mean, even if you were to, this is super, super basic, but if you were to have them select the card, they choose the Seven of Diamonds, it gets lost in the deck, and you spread the deck out again, and you say, okay, now you have to find your card. And they go, okay, well, it's there, the Seven of Diamonds. So, like, you're slowly building up the fact that they have to remember what the card is. So they found the Seven of Diamonds the first time. Let's shuffle it again. Can you find it again? Where's your card? Oh, it's there, the Seven of Diamonds. Okay, now try doing it when the cards are face down. And that could lead into they remember what the card is because they've twice actively looked for it. And then the third time, they're picking a card that goes in their hand and it turns over and they've managed to get it.
Yeah. Oh.
I don't know.
There's more to explore here as well, which is, I think you mentioned this just before we started, and one of the points to cover is that that element of surprise can sometimes be taken away just before the reveal happens.
Yeah.
So in some cases, they'll be shown the X card. They've already chosen and lost their card in the deck. X card's placed into their hand. And for whatever reason, something is said by the magician or the crowd, which makes them say, oh, is that my card? Is that going to be my card? We've all heard that. That's going to be my card, isn't it? Tell me that's not my card. What could you say or do here to completely throw them off the scent?
So it's a tough one because sometimes you want that in the performance. Very, very much enjoy it when someone says, no, it's not before they turn something over. And sometimes you do want that, but then sometimes you do want it to completely hit them, like, you know, a lorry as they're crossing a motorway. And
it's, yeah, I like, so, yeah, sometimes you want that is it Hitchcock that says like the anticipation is more important than whatever, you know, the paraphrasing is,
but
where they're like, no, and then they freak out. But also then, yeah, there's something to be said for, like, hey, could you hold this glass while I go and do my shoelaces up? Oh, by the way, that glass is now your mobile phone. And they're like, what the, you know, it catches them completely like a roundhouse. Like the hardest punches are the ones you don't see come in.
So it is a big difference between handing them a card and saying to them, and when you turn that card over, you're going to see why they call me the Master Magician, and handing them a card and saying, now that's not your card, but in a moment, I'm going to ask you to turn it over and imagine that it's your card. And then do what it actually is. Like, there's a big difference, and you can go either way. Both are completely valid.
But the way that I used to do this, and this is going back donkey's years, but was like, I would give the card a purpose, the X card a purpose. So it would be like, it would normally be, I do this, like, stab that card in the deck. I mean, it's going to find your card, but hold on tight to it. Don't let go. Oh no, we've missed it. Damn. Oh, wait there. Look at the card in your hand type thing. Which is good. It's really good. And the only reason I ever stopped doing it, And I think this is just purely personal preference, but I just felt like there's just this element of them giving themselves the false method of, oh, he switched it in the deck. Well, you know, I didn't hold it tight enough. Like, you want that isolation to be really focal, I think. But there's got to be potentially some purpose or at least some conditioning so that when they're holding that card on and off, you know, they could make them hold it on and off so that they are, for example, in the case of the first sort of way we explored this by drawing attention to like a Jack of Spades.
Yeah.
You could, you know, maybe you hand them the deck, right? And I don't know where I'm particularly going with this. Can you do me a favor? Can you go through that deck and take out the Jack of Spades and hand it to your friend here? Ask them, just place it in their palm. So they go through the deck for you and they place it in their palm. You say, can you place it face down? Or maybe face up, so you've got a reason to turn it face down for now. But let's just say, just place it in their palm. Place it, hold their palm up, place it there. That way, you're not going to be able to select it. Okay? Okay, hand me back the deck, or keep hold of the deck, and now I want you to choose a card for yourself. This is, and by the way, the Jack of Spades is not your card, and I'll explain what this is about in a moment. So now they go through, they pick out, let's go for that Five of Hearts again. Okay, here, they pick it out, you take back the remaining deck, say, I'm going to shuffle, or, well, either, no, because you, if you, it depends on whether you're going to angle this as a, you know the card or not. But let's just say you don't know it. So you say, take a card for yourself. Don't show it to me, but hand me back the deck so we can shuffle it and lose it back in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now it's controlled. So at this point, the card's lost in the deck, right? They've taken out the Jack of Spades and they've given it to someone. They've given it, they have begun to condition the participant who is holding onto the card here.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is all it needs is that they say place it face down in the hand in their hand. So they know they've taken that Jack of Spades out. And they know they've placed it face down. The reasoning could be keep it face down. I don't want us to be focusing on that card when, you know, I don't want us to draw any attention away. So now you have the deck back, the card's lost in it. You could say, could you hold your hand out like Billy Bob's over there? I want you to hold this Jack of Spades in the same manner and top change it and place it in.
Right.
Now, this probably sounds really stupid on the surface, and it probably is really stupid on this deep underneath as well. But my thinking here is that from a visual standpoint, from a visual frame of reference, and also like this conditioning side of things, the participants taken out the Jack of Spades themselves, right? It's now isolated from the deck. They've placed it face down in someone's hand on the palm. So they see that image of that, right? Like that's, imagine that like a Polaroid. So that's there. And it exists outside of the deck on its own, of its own accord. They've selected a card and this is their own thing, which is lost in the deck. And again, these are two separate objects now. They're not like, they don't seem to be interacting with one another. Whatever the reason is going to be, which could be created later on for saying, can you place the jacket now over to his hand, bow back to your hand. This jack, which has been isolated essentially the entire time, is not in their mind. It's not like interacting with the deck. So in the other X versions, the card is on top of the deck. You know, or the X card is on top of the deck or within the deck or part of those pile of cards just slightly could be considered as being like, oh, did he just switch one for the other? But if the card's completely isolated, and then also this conditioning of it being out in the open face down on the palm of someone's hand since before the card was selected, it feels like they're not going to go, oh, that's now my card. It doesn't seem like the natural thought process is going to be, oh yeah, now that's my card.
No, it feels like you're setting up something else.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's it. It feels like you're leading them down a different path that has a dead end. Because the original method would be, hey, choose this card, okay? Now watch this other card. I'm going to place this other card into your hand, okay? What do you think is going to happen? If you ask that question then, they'd say, it's going to become my card, right?
Yeah.
But in this instance, hey, could you take out this card from the deck, give it to him, right? Now you choose a different card, Perfect, and let it get lost in the deck. Actually, I want you to keep hold of the card he's holding instead. Maybe both of you put your hand. What put your hand on top so it's still there. What if I said what do you think is going to happen to that card? It feels like that card's going to vanish more than in my head. If they would say make it disappear, like I don't know. Maybe I'm just being too confident, but no. It doesn't feel like that. The necessary line of action is going to be that.
And you know what I like as well? I really like one participant giving the other participant the card, because then that's like breaking the chain between the magician and the card.
Yeah.
That's really, really fun and smart. One participant play, because there's no sleight of hand that the participant's going to be doing. They're not a stooge. So I don't know. It feels interesting.
There's something to it. And obviously, like the top change makes people quiver with with fear. I'm trying to think. Because the other element to then these changing card effects are that Rory Adams talks about this, and I love repeating it, but if you make a coin vanish, right, then the audience say, where the fuck's the coin? And they start looking for it. If you make that coin reappear, then they wonder where it came from or how did it get there. Like it's sort of they close off a line of questioning. In the case of like a card trick, like two card Monty's, a lot of magicians are attempted to, when the cards switch, say like the two aces switch to two queens, a lot of magicians are tempted to cut those two aces into the deck or put them in their pocket and say, and now they end up over here, which actually never gets a stronger reaction as the trick itself. And I talk about this in my lecture to a point where I actually use a graph, I think, to illustrate that. Or I did originally, because I use a graph for the other parts of it. Anyway, that trick never hits as strong, right? I always think it's reductive. In this case, that X card, that Jack of Spades, for example, is it stronger if that now appears? Because it's got to, are they going to be left thinking, or do they, you know, how often are they left thinking, well, where did the Jack go? Have they got an unanswered question?
Yeah.
Or are they just so bowled over, like, fucking hell, my card is now in my hand? Or not? And if you were to reveal it, you know, would it be in a wallet, in your pocket? Where would be the most likely place for it? Would you want to just say, like, look, we'll place it in between two aces. You place a selected card between two aces in the deck. We'll remember this for later. And then you come back and that Jack of Spades now has taken the place of the five. You know, it kind of becomes more like into transpo territory then.
Yeah. And the more we add onto this, the more it does move away from a card being placed in a hand. So it's almost unfair in a way. To be saying, how can we make this better when we're just making it a separate trick entirely?
Yeah, and the kind of the focus with what script could we really add to this, not so much anything else.
Although I do really like their approach, and I think you should maybe carry on working with some of those ideas, because they're quite cool.
Do you know what would be funny? Like, just completely out there, is if you took, I'm going to keep using the Jack of Spades as the X card, not the select card. If you just took that Jack of Spades before you began, a duplicate Jack of Spades.
Yeah.
And if it's got a story to it, you know, if it's got, you could say, oh, my son, for example, chose this card. I could put like a tear in it, because he's clumsy. He's 3 years old, you know. Or I could put teeth marks in it, saying my son was teething and he bit this card. It's quite unique on its own. But if I took that card with teeth marks in it, a duplicate one, maybe I could actually bite two exactly the same time, so they have identical teeth marks in, or have my son do it. Yeah. Then I could just take it and say I'm performing at a coffee shop. I could go and stick it to the other side of a window of a shop outside the coffee shop. And then you could, so you do the effect, right? As is, as we've described here. So this is my son's favorite card. I don't need to choose that because he's bitten. Maybe that's the reason why they don't choose it, because he's bitten it. He's teething. It's the only deck of cards I have left, and he's bitten it, little bastard. So instead of doing that, could you just find a card maybe that has some relevance to you? And I'll explain what I mean. You know, diamonds sort of represent wealth, value. Spades is like ambition, digging deep. Hearts, obviously. Clubs is sort of conflict. And then you can make anything from them. But any card that particularly might stand out to you, you can make some relevance to. Blah, 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 blah. Two hearts. Okay, I've just met the person of my dreams. Brilliant. Two hearts combined. Love. Okay, we'll use the two of hearts now. Remember that Jack of Spades at the beginning? One with the teeth marks in. I want you to hold on to it. And we can. This is the thing that I want to create the most, is the reasoning for that part. But
yeah,
hold on to that Jack of Spades. Okay, cool. It goes into your hand. Da, 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 da. X, Y, Z. And now the Jack changes into the two. Okay, so that happens. At this point, you could say they're going to react. They're going to go crazy. But here you could say, I bet you all have the same question as I do. Where does that, you know, if that doesn't become the Jack just goes somewhere else. But magic isn't an exact science. Have you ever seen when people in movies, they say they jump through time, but sometimes they're months out. It's the same thing with cards. They don't always end up back in the deck. In fact, there's no Jack of Spades in this deck. But I bet that when we leave here, or it'll be somewhere near us, I just can't guarantee where it is. Just keep your eyes peeled. Leave it for half an hour. Make sure you don't leave their sight. And then as you're walking out, you're like, oh, fucking hell, there it is. And then you just point casually and it's like stuck to a window, or it's underneath a plant pot, or hanging out of like a fucking trash bin, something, you know?
I you know, I really like that plot line, because so many people use the whole like time traveling narrative in card tricks, and there's certain tricks that are very, very famous where time travel or freezing a moment in time is a large part of it. I've never really played around with it too much besides one effect, but I do like the idea of time travel being the reason that there's two cards.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's a fucking paradox.
Or like you say, the reason that, you know, it's kind of misplaced in time, and it's somewhere near us right now, but I couldn't say where. It's not an exact science, an exact art. I really like that. It's a lot of fun.
There is something to it, I think. I don't know, it adds some sort of credibility in the
well,
most counteractive way. Anyway, this script of I'm gonna place this card in your hand.
Yeah.
Fucking why? What, that's the bit that I want to like nail.
Yeah, why are you using the participant as a stage if not because something is about to happen?
A great example is I think Bill Malone, and don't kill me if I'm wrong, but when does Malone. Dr. Daly's last when he does Dr. Daly's last trick, I think it's him that talks about the weight of the aces, the ink in them. You know, so the red aces are heavier, and the black aces are heavier than the red aces. Now, the thing that's beautiful about that is you're getting them to hold cards, and they think they're doing it to weigh them. And it gives them a very solid reason, because they're really like, oh yeah, can I feel the difference? Like, they're really into that. It makes complete sense and catch them completely off guard then, because they're thinking so down. They're busy worrying if they can recognize the difference in weight, when really it's not even the same card.
Yeah, it's kind of an elegant solution to the problem, because sometimes it feels a little bit trite saying to a spectator, and you keep hold of this to keep it safe, because they're like, keep it safe from what, mate? The fucking Night King isn't going to come down and steal my card.
Yeah. I wonder if you could say to someone like, if you introduce other objects, you're like, right, we're going to try and test your blind ability, right? So at this point, they've chosen the Five of Hearts. It's lost in the deck. You just got casually on top of the deck, the Jack of Spades, which is a double, turned face up. You say, look, I'm going to hand you a coin. Keep your eyes open. Hold that coin in between your fingers and thumb, and tell me what it feels like. Describe it to me. And now I want you to close your eyes and do the same thing. Okay. And they do that. So then you say, let's try it with like a coffee stirrer. Let's try it with a coffee stirrer. They do the same thing here. I feel like there's a reason in here that is going to present itself. I don't know what it is yet. Like, oh, So now you're good at being able to tell the difference between materials. But I don't know. So now you say, okay, then finally we'll do it with the jack, with a card. So just take the jack, hold on to it. Now describe it to me. Now do it with your eyes closed. Again, it's now changed. It is a different card. But I wonder how far you can get them to go, like to really think in it. It's still not as solid. Like I love the whole weight.
Yeah.
The whole weight thing. You know, here's the other thing with that. You could start off with a blank card. So you begin with this blank card. You say, I've got a deck of 50. Actually, I think there's 51 cards because there's been obviously some sort of an error. They've printed a blank card in this deck. Actually, hold on to it before you begin. And you'll notice, well, if I give you like a king and you hold on to the blank card in different hands, you'll notice that the blank cards feel slightly lighter. And they'll be like, yeah. And say, it's because of the ink. It's not rocket science, but there's a miniature difference. Now they select a card, gets lost in the deck. And you give them the blank card again, for whatever reason. They're like, oh, actually, let me show you something with this blank card. Hold on to it again. And I want you to try and, I know it sounds silly, but remember the weight of this card. Now, if they've got their arm outstretched and you leave the blank card in, you could do some pseudo-hypnosis here.
Yeah.
And say, now this might sound silly, but I want you to really feel like that card is getting heavier. Imagine it's becoming, that there's more weight to it. And the reason could be that there's more ink. Maybe you can imagine that there's more ink on it. And then the hand will, if it's outstretched, it will naturally drop. That's just pseudo-hypnotism 101. Mm-hmm. That's basically qualifying shit, you know, for getting a participant. But now they're going to tell themselves, oh my God, this blank card is getting heavier. But also the reasoning is that beautiful reasoning that I think it was Bill Malone of using the weight of the ink or, you know, holding your hand out to feel that weight. Now, or maybe you could use the Ace of Diamonds, right? Because you could say, have you ever heard of the heaviest card in the deck? Whatever fucking reason that is. Which sounds a bit like it's going off that storyline narrative. But yeah, that whole premise of the hand physically getting heavier, and then you're like, oh, you know why it's heavier? Because it's now become your card. It would totally catch them by surprise.
Yeah. I like the idea of them, the justification for them holding the cards to be a test of some sort. Because there's there's audience participation. They're getting to test something. They're getting to see something for themselves, whether they confirm it or not. And then there is the justification of them having the cards. It doesn't feel like it's necessarily part of a routine. It feels like that's the natural way the conversation is going.
Yeah.
So to any approach that uses that to obfuscate the fact that a routine is happening, I really like. And I don't think I'd actually read the stuff to do with the weight of the cards, but that's quite interesting.
I think I see it on like his On the Loose DVD set. I'm pretty sure like the performances are on YouTube even as well, because I watched a few with Javier. I was showing Javier. I talked about this last week with the 21 card trick.
Yeah.
His 21 card trick is phenomenal.
You could talk about a notorious French card shark called Lesnoot. And he was notorious because he knew the scent of each card, and that was how he won at poker. And when he wanted to remember a particular card, he'd have a dab of cologne on the end of his finger that he just gracefully touched against it. And you can actually smell the difference between cards as well. I don't know if you realize this. if you were to take the three of spades, you'd notice that it smells like blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I don't know.
Ooh. And there is something in that, though, isn't there?
Maybe for a more comedic angled magician than myself.
Yeah. Some things it lends themselves to comedy magic so well. Like you can hide methods in comedy so much better sometimes. But you could say, do you know why dogs can't? You can't perform card tricks on dogs. And they say because they're fucking dogs. No, because yeah, that's true. Also, my dog's an idiot. But also, because when they choose a card, they can track it better than you.
Yeah.
They know exactly where that card is at all times. Because they have a heightened sense of smell. In fact, every card that we touch takes on our scent. But we just don't have that ability to smell it. But what we can do is little tips, and we can artificially enhance that. For example, if you have any cologne on your wrist or on your neck, take a card out, rub it on that cologne. Rub it, rub it, rub it, rabbit. Give that card to someone there. Can you smell their cologne on that card? And they'll probably say, yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. It's nice, right? Yeah, it's really nice. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to lose this card in the deck. Da-da-da-da, shuffle it up, not. And we're going to introduce a different card. And you could say, now, do you smell their cologne on this card? They'll say, no. Perfect. Do you smell your cologne on this card? No. Hold on to it. And now I want you to hold it away from yourself. And then just imagine your smell coming on. Now bring your hand to your card and ask the person next to you or whatever. I don't know what the fuck's going to go on here. But because it actually will have some of their cologne on it now, their aftershave on it. When they smell that, thinking what they think is an X card, when they smell it, they're like, that does smell kind of like your card.
Yeah.
And then they turn it over, and it is.
It's so stupid, but it's so fun. When I was a fair bit younger, that actually was the method to a trick that I used to do.
No.
And it was just a drop of, like, perfume on your finger and a card that they've selected. That then they can run through the cards and you have your eyes closed, but they hold it next to, against your forehead, but you can smell when it's their card.
Oh, that's quite clever, actually.
No, it's stupid. It's stupid, but it was. I used to really like borrowed deck effects that you could do kind of anywhere.
No, that's really clever, man. That's cool.
I kind of like that though. It's not. It's not necessarily anything I would perform, but I think that there are some people who could do something really cool with that premise.
Yeah.
And like you say, the fact that they can actually then smell their cologne on a card and they're like, but they're holding my card.
And now you can keep that impossible object.
That impossibly scented card, yes.
And now you can keep this fucking disgusting object.
I think now might be a good point to say, you know, any kind of routine, it's not necessarily critique that we're given. It's just different approaches. And we are 100% not saying we are the authorities in any way, shape or form.
Oh, God, no. And to be honest with you, like a lot of the routines that we're like breaking down and trying to constructively criticize. Like,
yeah,
we perform a lot of them. Or I have, at least, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it's good to take any trick, every single trick, and work out what you think could be updated on it, or work out what you don't like, break it apart in every way possible,
yeah,
and then rebuild it.
Yeah, it's not an autopsy. It's just advanced appreciation.
Yeah, yeah. If I'm not looking at a trick to deconstruct it and rebuild it, then that's probably says more about what I think of it.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know? I think that's spot on.
But let's go back to one thing then, Jake, because I this is the part that I really wanted to topple today, which is some pseudo script that could potentially enhance the moment the card is in their hand, or bring it all back full circle.
Okay, I'm totally down to jam something like this out, because pseudo is what I've been writing a lot of at the moment. I showed you just before we started recording a routine that I've been playing with that uses pseudo. So you've got the ways that you could influence them are the weight, the fact that you've shown them a card beforehand. You could persuade them that you've made them see a certain card. What other elements of pseudo hypnosis could you bring into it?
Well, there's weight and scent. I'm not a big pseudo-hypnosis guy, so I don't know a lot about this kind of thing. Not really like my field.
So the most kind of obvious common ploy that I use when it is a sole participant is to convince them that something has happened that they don't remember, because I specifically didn't want them to remember. And it just depends whether or not you want to go down that route. I think previously, I can't even remember what episode it is, because like we said, this is episode 40. We've done a few of them now. Maybe one of the very early episodes, I spoke about a routine I have called HypnoCoin that involves convincing the participant That they have moved one out of two coins from one of your hands to the other, so that you now have a coin in each hand. Or you can do it so, you know, it's just one coin that goes from one hand to the other. And the pseudo element is made up of you convincing them that it was them that has actually done this act in a moment where they have brief amnesia and have forgotten about it entirely, when it is just mechanical sleight-based stuff. So you could easily use something like this with a card move. It just depends what element you want to persuade them that they have forgotten about, or if that's even the route you want to go down. Lloyd's smelling things, testing his sense.
I've been sent some free tranquil candles from the People's Postcode Lottery.
Oh.
From the postcode. Anyway, yes. Okay, two things. One, which is more exciting than the other. But first of all, what if you change the card? Right, so the cards change in their hand. They think they're holding the Jack of Spades. Spoiler alert, they're fucking not. Pardon my language, sorry. But you say to them, in a moment, you're going to look at that Jack of Spades and you're going to imagine that you see it as your card. But this only works if you truly believe it. Okay, so you're going to say to yourself, when I look at that Jack of Spades, I am going to see my card. And I want you to imagine, picture the color, the detail, the lines, all the value or the letter that's in the corner, the picture of the eyes of the court card or whatever it is. But you have to picture it first and then just briefly look at that Jack of Spades. And I want you to see it as your card, okay? And then look away. So maybe I say, I want you to just look at it briefly and put it straight back down. And they will see their card.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Now, at this point, they're probably going to react, because if they were just playing along, they wouldn't react, right? So if it was the Jack of Spades, they'd be like, okay. But if they see it, they might be like, what the fuck moment? At this point, you could take it back and then put it on top of the deck, show a double or top chain, show it double as the Jack of Spades. Or you could say, now, if you did that well, you may have seen what you believed was your card, but obviously it's not. But I want you to now imagine it becoming that card. And this time when you turn it over, we should all be able to see it.
Right.
As that card. So you're just breaking down really the reveal. You're breaking it into two moments. One, they're pretending. Everyone thinks they're just pretending they see their card and they convince themselves. And then the second moment is that it becomes real.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I like it. I think if you kind of worked with the script into give them more of a reason to pretend. So if you say to them, okay, you're going to turn over that card, it's going to be the Jack of Spades, but you're going to pretend, you're going to imagine and visualize that you see your card, and then you're going to put it down, and then you're going to look over to Steve over there, and you're going to look him in the eyes and lie to him and say, I have just saw the Three of Clubs or whatever the card is. And so maybe if you built in something where it's like they have to pretend, and the aim of the game is you've got to convince this other person that you did see that card. But then I guess it, no.
Oh, what if it's like, okay, so I'm going to place the X card in your friend's hand face down.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what your card is. But in a moment, they're going to look at that Jack of Spades. And they're going to pretend that it's a different card. They're going to just see it as a different card. Hopefully the card they see it as is your card. Okay. So I'll riffle all the cards. Oh, this could be quite fucking cool, actually. Right. So let's do this. So Jake.
Yes.
Blah, blah, blah. Jack of Spades is our X card. Jake, you're going to choose a card from the deck. So okay. Tell everyone what card you choose. Except when tell me what card you choose. Don't tell Bob over here.
Oh, I'm just whispering any card to you.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
For the sake of the podcast.
Okay, Three of Diamonds.
Okay, so the Three of Diamonds lost into the deck. Now, Billy Bob, you're going to hold any card that isn't Jake's. So, Jake, can you confirm that the Jack of Spades is not your card?
Yeah, it's not.
Brilliant. Billy Bob, hold your hand out. We're going to place the Jack of Spades face down in your hand. Now, Billy Bob, I'm going to riffle all the cards towards your face, and you're going to think of one. Got one? Right? Now, Billy Bob, that Jack of Spades in your hand, you're going to turn it over and you're going to imagine it as a different card now. Okay? And they immediately look away from it. And I don't know if this like kind of dual reality makes him think that he's seen a different card in the deck. You mm-hmm. know? I don't know. Maybe this is just overkill.
No, it's not overkill at all. You know what else you could add to it? The original spectator, have them keep hold of their card the whole time, but it's a completely separate card. But that's never revealed, because before the second participant says, you know, the one they were imagining, thinking of, both of the cards can just go back in. But they've both got different cards than they think they should have.
Oh fuck! Okay. Shit.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. Okay, well, anyway, they yes, just to finish this off, then they look at this card, they see it as three of spades, or three of clubs, whatever it was. You immediately take it back off them, and now you could say, what card did you see it as? He'll say three of clubs, and you react, oh, fuck, that's my card. And you show to everyone that the Jack of Spades was the card he was holding by top changing it or something. So it's like he's read your mind. Again, this is not the trick, but yes. Okay, we're getting into it.
That's fine. We're allowed to do whatever we want. It doesn't matter.
There's a trick by Justin Miller called Smile.
Right.
I've been thinking about this all week. Have you ever heard of it?
I don't think so, no.
It's fucking phenomenal. Such a worker.
Which era of Justin Miller is it? That'll give me a better idea of if I've seen
this
it or not.
This is Justin Miller doing his what was the trick he called face off or something with a double facer?
Oh, I remember that one.
It was his anniversary was the double facer era. So it's around that area. Basically, it's very, very simple. Card is selected, and this is actually a trick that people should probably be doing a lot more often. Card selected, lost. X card is introduced, and you say, can you bring out your phone? They say yes. He says, hold your hand so that your index finger is pointing towards the sky. You can see your palm. I'm doing this for the sake of the podcast, right? And then bring your thumb up to touch that index finger, and now you could got basically like a little pincher so you can hold up. I'm going to show you this X card. I'm going to place it in your hand. And with your phone, we're going to take a photo of you.
I remember the performance video of this now. Yeah.
So basically, they're holding a playing card. They're looking at the back of the card. It's actually their card, but they don't know that. And with their phone, you take a picture of them holding the card. As you hand their phone back, you take the card off them and turn it on top of the deck. And maybe this is his trick. It's a really old release, and I really apologize if I've tipped too much on it. Fuck. But basically, yeah. They hold what they think is an X card. You take a photo of them holding it. You show it still air quotes as the X card, and then that card in Justin's trick, he then visually changes that X card into theirs, and not only does it change in his hand or in the deck, now when they look at the phone, it's also changed on the phone.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, in the performance video, it is the oldest camera phone in existence.
Yeah, they're all flip phones, because other people, spectators' phones, it's all flip phone stuff, right? Phenomenal trick. But it makes me wonder, could you just restructure it? So you begin by using a Jack of Spades, right? We're going to keep using that.
Mm-hmm.
Say, I want to do something for a moment. We're going to use the top card of the deck, whatever it is, the Jack of Spades. Can I use your phone to take a photo? Open up the camera, hold your fingers like this, hold on to that Jack. We'll snap a photo. Perfect. Close your phone, put it away. Thank you very much. Now, whatever card you secretly switched the Jack for, you're just going to force.
Yeah.
Right. So now, whatever you want to do, force that card, show it here. Okay, perfect. This is your card, the Eight of Hearts. This will get lost into the deck. And now the trick is just slightly altered. Just so that instead of it being a photo where the card changes after the fact, it could be more along the lines of it never happening. You know, like oh, you remember at the beginning. I don't know. Oh, maybe I don't know. Still, it's a great trick by Justin Miller. I feel like there's a way actually of incorporating this into that change card effect.
Yeah, I think that general plot line is super, super strong. And it's the reason it gets used in so many, you know, like public or promo appearances. Magicians will use effects like that involving taking a photo. It's there's a reason that it's used in so many like David Blaine things, or YouTube magicians use it at promo appearances. It's because it's very, very memorable. And for a modern audience, you know, especially if there's a little crowd of people looking at a photo, it's a great reaction.
Yeah, it's not an impossible object. That's the only thing. People say, I left you with an impossible image, an impossible photo. I've always toyed with the idea of getting their phone, instructing them to hold their hands in the position of the photo, in the position of hold card, and silently, secretly taking the photo of them holding nothing.
Yeah.
And then snapping it.
Mm-hmm.
Snapping the photo of it in their hands, right? Or apparently snapping it, but really you never do. So they have a photo of themselves holding no playing card, but they believe that it was just them holding the card. Especially if you're like, okay, you spend like a few seconds, like, right, hang on, just further, just there, but okay, smile, and then delete the photo. But really, you've already got one. I don't know, because they don't know what it's going to look like or the exact positioning. Anyway, now at this point, when you do a card vanish later on, whatever way, you say, look, this card's going to vanish. Not only does it vanish here, but it was we never took this card, never existed.
Mm.
You know, we take it. The photo, it wasn't even the photo.
Oh, I like that. That's actually quite cool.
Or like the card is somewhere else. So you transpose, you say, do you know why? Like this card, it was never here. It was always over there. It's never been here. In fact, we never even took a photo with it.
So that it would be cool if you were to do that in like a coffee shop where there is, you know, a board on the wall and you've actually got the card pinned to the wall. So in the photo you take, secretly, where they're about to grab hold of a card, the actual card is pinned behind them on the wall.
Oh, that's good. That's great. That's so good.
That would be cool.
Wow, yeah.
Oh, I like that a lot.
Yeah, see, so you get a photo of them holding nothing. They think you're just holding the card. You take that card back. You vanish it. You reveal it wherever it's going to be, and you say, the crazy thing is, I didn't even show you a trick. I didn't even show you any magic. This card was never here. This card was always there. This card was there before you even walked in the room. In fact, we never even took a photo of you holding the card. You know, it's just like, if they ever did spot a card when they walked in the room, it completely, you kind of want them to reveal the method before they walk in, wherever it's going to be. Like, did you notice the Jack of Spades on the wall when you walked in? Yeah, that was the Jack of Spades we took a photo of. It's still there. We never took a photo of it.
That's fun. Oh, I do like the idea of, you know, maybe you're holding the phone and maybe, even if you're holding it a little bit wonky, say, and, you know, you can press the volume button to take the photo.
Yeah.
So you say to them, just hold your fingers like this, and maybe you're holding their fingers, okay, and smile, and you take a photo then, and you say, we're going to put a card in here, and blah, blah, blah. And then when you go to take the photo, all you can be doing is leveling out the photo so that it's straight.
Oh, adjusting it, so it flattens it.
Yeah.
Clever.
Oh, you know, I mean, you don't have to hold a phone like that. I just mean to try to kind of sway away from the fact.
Just to get it, just to get it.
You could easily just hold it like that, and it's perfectly natural.
Mm.
I say hold it like that. I realize this is a podcast. I'm just holding the phone between my thumb and forefinger, but with my thumb on the volume button, so you can kind of surreptitiously take a picture.
Yeah, that would work. That would easily work.
I like that approach a lot, especially if you're going down the pseudo-hypnosis route, because you've got the evidence, this picture that is evidence, and then you've got, I don't know, I just like the idea of saying to someone, I actually persuaded you that you were holding a card when you weren't holding anything at all. And obviously this wouldn't just be a one and done thing. You would have to lead into that somewhere, otherwise you're not going to get to the, you're not going to have been in that situation long enough to say, I managed to do this, and for it to be kind of believable. I think you would need like an effect beforehand that utilizes some form of pseudo-hypnosis as well.
Mm.
So that you can then say, and I also managed to convince you this, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I feel like it'd have to be the part of something a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'll just say no, because it took 10 seconds. I know for a fact you didn't convince me that I was holding the card.
So much to explore. Well, here's the other thing, right? The last thing would be, and we did kind of touch on this, but this is such a good trick, and it's a universal opener, that if you performed any magic and you didn't introduce the idea of a card changing in their hand throughout any of the routines, for example, let's say you did 5 effects. You did Ambitious Card, a Sandwich routine.
Yeah.
You could do a Triumph in the hands, a card at any number, or any card at any number. All really good, powerful pieces of magic. And then finish by doing one final thing. I'm gonna, you know, like, and then finishing on this and making this big, even though it's the most basic out of all the tricks in terms of method. But now you say, I want to show you something really special. I don't, you know, that XYZ. Hold, you know, hold on to this card. Look, I'm not gonna even come near it. Everything else you've seen me do has been using the deck card, which maybe I could have manipulated. I could have used sleight of hand. I could have used special tricks and ploys and forces. But this is the only trick that I'm going to show you that you're going to do yourself. You're holding the card stuck between your hands. Just imagine it becoming the card that you were thinking of. 3, 2. Turn it up. You know, just finish on that.
Love it, man.
It could be made to feel really, really big.
Yeah. Stuff like this is perfect because of how modular it can be and where you place it into an act.
Yeah,
I think we all know how good a reaction it gets. It deserves its place sometimes as a finale.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you frame it as, but if, yeah, exactly, and that's it. If you just frame it as like, I'm going to show you one final thing, and the key thing here is that you've managed to avoid changing a card. You know, Ambitious Card is the card coming to the top. Sandwich is the card appearing between two cards. Triumph is the deck I'm mixing. Any card at any number is a card at an exact position. But at no point have they seen a card change.
Mm-hmm.
So when it does finally happen, it could elicit a bigger reaction.
Oh, and here's the reason that it should be what you do if you are maybe table hopping. Because you can do it and walk away before the reveal as you're on the way to the next table. And as you're introducing yourself, a table behind you is going mental. Because they've decided to finally turn over the card in their hand. Or, I mean, if you're a social casual performer, you do it as you're leaving the coffee shop. Okay, I'll see you next time. You know, turn over that card whenever you want, but just not when I'm here.
I wonder if you did this, man.
I'm listening.
This might be stupid, but obviously you wouldn't obviously need a fucking dupe. But if before the trick began, before the routine began, you perform this trick over the space of like 10 minutes. So basically you say, look, before we begin, we're going to pick a bad guy. Or I don't know. I've just performed a trick with... on that table over there, I just showed them a trick and they used this signed 2 of clubs. Or they signed my 2 of clubs. So it's the only card I don't want us to use because it's ruined. Can you hold on to it for me? Top change for a force card, right? In fact, place it in your back pocket. Or if only there's a way to... Well, there is a way, but to consistently have them not look at a card as they place it in their pocket. Anyway, so now they do that. So now the final thing you do is that you force the corresponding card that they've got. So you have a duplicate.
Yeah.
Right? So you've done all these tricks. Card comes to the top. It's Sandwich. Triumph is a card at a certain position. And now you say, one final thing. I'm going to show you this. This is the most special thing that we did. There was a card. You've chosen a card, or you're thinking of it. Maybe they just think of it. You know, you force them to think of it. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm not going to do anything. Before we began, I placed one card. We took one card from the deck and placed it, give it to one of you. I don't even know who has it. You know, and then that card's going to become the card you're thinking of. And now when they turn it over or pull it out of their pocket. So it's just the same trick. Exactly the same trick, but you're just doing it. Well, you are using a force card. There is that. But you're doing it. You're starting the trick at the beginning and finishing it at the end of the routine.
Yeah. It's just playing around with the individual elements of it, and the idea of them, the idea of it approaching it from that angle is really interesting to me. Even if you were to say to them, okay, we're, none of us are going to look at this card, and then the way that you stop them from looking at it is fold it and give them a folded card.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah, it's just still be like, oh, this is the card from the last effect over there. And it's got, we can't use it because it's got creases in and it's signed. So can you just hold on to it, please? Boom. Now they choose a card. And, I mean, at this point, it's kind of becoming in French Kiss territory, but that card, you could fold up and fold up, put a crease in, and then when you unfold it, it's now got the signature from the last table. Mm-hmm. It's the card that was the thingy, and now when in their pocket is the same one. It's basically, it is just French Kiss, but with the caveat being that the difference being that this starts before the routine begins, and you're getting rid of the card. It's not the focal point. You're getting it out of the deck because it's essentially ruined.
Yeah. I love it, man. I actually really like that. I might play around with that one a little bit. I would actually really like to hear other people's approaches to this, because we've kind of waxed lyrical for way too long. We've only went over about four or five different ways that you could approach this. I bet you there are people who've got the same effect worked in over 20 years of experience where they do it a very specific way and they've just never really shared it before.
Yeah, and way better ideas than what we've got.
but if anyone has an interesting approach to just this simple fundamental effect that everyone does because it gets such good reactions, please, please, please email team@theblackartco.com or post it in the Facebook group, the Black Art Discussion Group. I think it's just called the Black Art Podcast or the Black Art Podcast Discussion Group or something like that. If you go on theblackartco.com, you'll be able to find all the links.
Yeah, theblackartco.com will give you links to the discussion group, some merch of ours, woohoo, and you can send us a message or listen now, and it'll take you to all the different streaming services you can listen to this on, whether that's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, RSS feeds, and many, many more.
Oh, hell yeah. You best be wearing your Black Art Podcast t-shirt at Blackpool.
Mate, hell yes. Are you?
Yeah. I might
you all wearing your Black Art Podcast t-shirt. Let us know that you know that we know that you know that you we know.
Yeah, and then we get to give a subtle cool guy nod to you.
All right then, folks. Well, look, I have a life to live, so I have to go.
Do we have time for like 5 more minutes?
Yes.
Because I need your help with a question that someone sent.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, I apologize, Lloyd. I'm sure that the snooker or whatever it is you need to get to will wait. Right, here we go. This is a question from Darren Close, and it is a practical question. He needs help with something. Genuine question here. I've got a few gigs coming up that involve children. Any ideas on mentalism that can work for kids? I don't think my living and dead test would go down overly well. And the reason Darren asked this is because he has been booked for a few gigs that involve children, and he is very much a presenting himself as a real mind reader kind of performer. So a lot of the effects that he doesn't really do any visual magic per se, anything that, you know, could be transferable. The initial approach, because he asked this in a Discord group, and the initial approach would obviously be just to change the theme of whatever fundamentals he's comfortable with. So whether that is doing a living and dead test with different types of Pokemon or something, it would be easy to just switch themes with a lot of these effects. But you think there are things that he should stay far away from or that he should lean more into?
Where did your head go with it immediately?
So the first place I went, because I did want to help him.
What age are these kids?
That young, I believe, like between 4 and 9 or something. So, you know, something like Atlas Bruckin's superhero progressive anagrams are probably out of the question.
I know where I'm going with it.
I would love to hear. The first thing that I did was ask him, what is it that he already performs, that he's, you know, is comfortable kind of set that he does? And he said a lot of what he does is name reveals, pin reveals, ESP, living and dead, ESP, hypnosis, ACAN. So not a lot of it lends itself to performing to children.
Yeah.
Where did your head go first?
Things like schoolyard games.
Mm-hmm.
So witch hand effects.
Yeah.
Stuff they understand instantly. Witch hand effects, things like noughts and crosses effects, where they can do stuff like that. Predicting a Rubik's Cube is good, because I think they can understand that at those kind of ages, are the old type of older ones. Yeah, so that's kind of like, but like, make it relevant, things that they yeah, rock, paper, scissors type stuff.
Yeah, no, that's good advice. And the stuff that is based around more fundamentals, whether it is the name reveal, doesn't necessarily have to go away. Just make it a name reveal of their favorite, you know, cartoon character, so that they're actually interested in thinking of one.
Yeah. Oh, that's it's always a good shout. Or what games they play these mm-hmm. days, probably. But yeah, my head went to the stuff which they like, which is universal to them. Mind reading. What I mean, I'm trying to think what off the top of my head, what type of mind reading effects are there? Things like predicting what they want for Christmas, maybe.
That's cool. Yeah.
And then anything that has like a reveal to it, like a fun reveal to it.
Yeah, it's hard if you don't really specialize or perform any kind of visual magic.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do an ESP routine with matching Pokemon cards, but whether or not that's visual enough to hold attention, or whether or not that kind of, it doesn't get past the barrier of this child is five, they don't really care that the cards match up or line up.
Yeah.
It without having, you know, without being a kids performer, which is a very, which is a niche that requires a lot more talent than most people think. It's hard to say.
Difficult. What else? You have to have some sort of visual reveal, I think, for them, just to capture their attention.
Yeah,
but if they have phones, they might have PIN numbers,
mm-hmm.
and they actually could understand how impossible that would be.
True.
And passwords to accounts, so you can reveal a password if you got it as a peek.
Yeah,
and yeah, definitely kids those ages are using phones, so you could do inject and Google peek reveal. You know, Google reveals, absolutely.
Oh, that's true. I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, if they do have their own phones, then they're obviously well versed in using them. So yeah. I think maybe we don't give them enough credit.
And yeah, kids are smart. Like, a toxic reveal with cryptex for kids would be wicked.
Cryptex is a good shout.
Cryptex. So say, guys, you're going to make a massive giant number. I want you to put your date of birth in, times by your date of birth, times by your date of birth, times by your date of birth. Hit equals. You know, it's interactive, it's fun. So you've got a giant number here. No way I could have known this, right, guys?
Mm.
Yes. Cool. Reveal it as the number that you had pre-written somewhere on something. And then have a script text. The routine that I used to do, and it is on my Facebook fan page, is that I had a word selected and a number created by two different people. There's a video of me performing this in a bar, half cut. And then I would reveal the number written on a piece of paper, and then I would say, what was the word you were thinking of? And they said 8 ball, and I would turn the piece of paper over, and the number said the word 8 ball, and then I lit the flat, it was flash paper, I lit the paper and produced an 8 ball from it. So
nice.
That routine works for if you didn't use the word, maybe kids might know what an 8 ball is. I mean, You, even if they didn't, you say, what's the word you were thinking of? Eight ball. Oh, you mean like a pool ball, like an eight ball. And if they didn't, they'd go, oh, yeah.
I would just use a Pokeball.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Will it write with cryptext?
No, that's true.
But it probably would, actually.
I think
Pokeball.
it would.
Yeah, Pokeball. So then you reveal a Pokeball and the cryptext. Yeah, the cryptext says
Yeah,
that.
it'd be what the last letters would be 6043.
Something like that.
Yeah. I think the main thing to think about is children might not necessarily be too bothered about the trick selection, just make them laugh and be likable.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I know you're doing like mentalism stuff. I know you're focusing on being a real mentalist, but if it is to the kids and there's not really any adults watching, don't shy away from doing like a piece of magic or two. Like an angle zero type thing is brilliant for kids, any ages, you know. Because it can be quite, it's quite a mystical effect. It's not like typically like jazz hands magic, you know. It can be really like slowed down piece of strange.
That's true. I think, yeah, just be likable and do something that is kind of memorable, and any visual elements you can incorporate, that'll be good. But thank you for asking the question, Darren. It's very much appreciated.
Amazing. Right. Well then, folks, I have places to go, people to see. Thank you so much, Jake, for doing this episode again, as always, today.
Thank you. Is there anything we need to tell people about?
No, because the meet, well, anyone go to Blackpool, the Wednesday, the 14th of February, which is Valentine's Day, which is the evening before registration opens, there's a meetup at the House of Secrets in Blackpool. Tickets are now sold out. So they were free, but they had to register tickets because we hit capacity last year. But if you turn up at the door, some people may not turn up. So just come anyway, and we'll try and get you in. More excitingly, me and Jacob potentially slash are working on a couple of Blackpool books
Bundles.
bundles. Yeah, just some stuff that we've been working on behind the scenes. We've been teasing. The thing that I was talking about last week and some other, and Jake just showed me this fucking phenomenal in the hands card effect, which with a principle you like sort of all love, but also you've never seen it this way before. So yeah, we're busy writing and printing, and we will have some special Blackpool packs, but we'll probably have those sort of like in our hands next week, and then we can tell you what sort of deal we're doing and how you can get your hands on them, because we're only going to do a limited run for Blackpool as the bundle anyway. So you'll be able to get them through listening to the Black Art podcast online first, and then hopefully hopefully you can secure ones for yourself if you want them.
Hell yeah. And I've had a few new releases out since last episode. If anyone does want to check them out, it's just www.jakekeen.com.
JakeKeane,
Rock
right?
on.
.com. Go to JakeKeane.com. Check out the stuff he's been releasing on his Patreon. It is gold. That's actually a bunch of free stuff, right?
Yeah, there's loads of free stuff. If you go to jakekeen.com, there's a tab just called Free Magic. I think there's like four or five ebooks in there that you can just download for free.
No brainer. Free magic. Go get it. Anyway, until next week, folks, I've been Lloyd.
I've been Jake.
Meow, 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 meow.